Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. From hometown hockey, rocking the harbor, to finalizing budgets, it was a busy few weeks as 2020 began. However, the past year has been filled with successes and challenges. New developments, passing a cultural master plan, to deciding the future of the East Pier are only some of the accomplishments for Cobourg Council over the last year. It is also when the opioid epidemic reached new heights. Homelessness became more apparent. A controversy emerged in the neighborhood surrounding the county's only emergency shelter located in the downtown. Today, I continue my series of conversations with local politicians with an interview with Cobourg Mayor John Henderson to get his perspective on what can only be described as a busy first year for his council. So let's get started. Highs and lows seem to be the theme for the past year for Cobourg Council. A good example would be these past few weeks. As mentioned earlier, the hometown hockey broadcast during the first week of this month brought national attention plus an estimated $1 million in economic benefits, according to the town. Then, over a week later, Weston Foods announced it is closing Maplehurst Bakeries in the industrial park, putting 180 people out of work. To sort out this roller coaster of the past year and more, I am pleased to welcome Cobourg Mayor John Henderson to the studio. Welcome, John.
Rob, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the most recent events. The announcement regarding the closure of Weston Food in the industrial park. How did you learn about the closure?
Actually, I learned about the closure through a phone call with a member of Provincial Parliament, David Piccini. That was how I learned of that unfortunate news.
Did you have any forewarning at all? Had there been any indication from the company that they were even considering this?
Absolutely none. And the reason being, I want to stress that Weston's or Maplehurst has always been a very great corporate citizen within the town of Cobourg. We've had a strong working relationship well over 25 years. We helped them recently with a line production for cakes. So from our perspective, we thought all was holding true to their performance. Obviously not the case. And what we learned is that a corporate decision was made.
Since the announcement, has the town taken any action at all to maybe remediate or talk to anybody about maybe reconsidering?
We have, and at this point, I can only reiterate, it is a corporate much larger than ourselves in terms of their organizational framework. At this point, the plant will close. We do not have a definite date other than it will be somewhere later 2020. And our main key premise right now is to work through, I've already had meetings with MP Philip Lawrence, MPP David Piccini, and different ministry agencies and levels to see what we can do to start to address, more importantly, those 180 full-time employees.
Besides the steps that you want to take to help the employees make their transition, has there any steps that the town can take to save these jobs?
At this point, my answer to you would be no. And the reason being because when we find, it reminds me of Kraft Days, it's a corporate decision that is dealing with all its unit under one umbrella. My understanding, they have between 30 and 50 different agencies under their umbrella as they go under a corporate remodeling or reorganization. Sometimes there's winners, and in this case, it's unfortunate because I don't consider ourselves a winner, but it was made very clear to us that they are proceeding, and therefore our focus really has to be back to the employees.
Have you spoken to anybody with the union that represents, I believe, about two-thirds of the employees there?
I have not at this point. That has all been done through way of MPP Piccini, MP Philip Lawrence, and through management. At this point, we're working with agencies, both federally and provincially, of what could be put in place, and we're working on those programs now, what could be put in place for those workers. So we're constantly having conversations on a weekly basis, if not daily, on what that might look like.
The town at one point had an economic development advisory committee that I understand was dissolved some time ago.
Right.
In the fact that we don't have an economic development office or staff, I mean, I know we have somebody that looks after small business, a small business coordinator, but who's really keeping an eye on this portfolio?
Well, a combination, we have three or four key individuals. What we've done, we have myself as mayor. We work with Melissa Graham, our retention officer, through Mr. Davey, our interim CAO. And of course, we work in alignment with Venture 13, with Wendy Curtis through CFDC, and anything that we could be doing, both from a creativity and innovation. We're also linked to Northumberland Manufacturers Association through Darla Price and the different agencies. So we meet on a very regular basis. In fact, today we have another 2.5 hour economic development meeting. I don't want you to think we don't have these meetings. We have these meetings on a very regular basis, not only for Northam, but for Lucas Point and anything else, and including Venture 13.
Well, I think it's important. Can you help us sort of tease this out a bit? Because there's a lot that you say is going on, and yet a lot has changed. And I'm just wondering to what extent, for example, you mentioned you have a retention officer, and yet when I go on your website, I don't see anybody that has that title. I see somebody that says they're in charge of small business.
Well, that's...
Help us understand what a retention...
The definition, we call the person a small business, but in fact, what they're doing, their key role is to work with all companies that we currently have. When we did our survey over a number of years, it indicated strongly that you do want to retain those that you have within your community, and often they're your mainstay of your foundation. We also do consistent visits to these industries and businesses, and that's when we learned that we're dealing with three, in fact, right now, who I will not name, but they're potentially looking at expansion. So as much as one industry is looking perhaps to expand, to grow, it's unfortunate that due to the economy, in other cases, it's going the opposite way. So there is a blend between the two, but I want you to know that this has always been a mainstay within the town of Colberg.
But these meetings that you're having, they're not, as there was before, an advisory committee. These are, what kinds of meetings are you having? Because the advisory committee was a public body. There were minutes to meetings. You could go. There were agendas. But what you've just described, I can't find that anywhere. I don't see
The information we have is internal. And what I attempt to do, certainly quarterly, if not during council, anytime there's updates, growth, measurement, outcomes, I share that through council each and every time. And I provide council and the public through a quarterly report, as well as I did through the mayor's levy.
Do you think that's transparent enough in the same way that the Economic Advisory Committee was transparent?
I do, because in all honesty, sometimes you have to weigh the committee if it's working for its outcomes. And I had to come to the conclusion after weighing it and being on it for 4 years, it really was not truly meeting its mandate. And sometimes you have to look at situations and look at things differently. There's no doubt we're going to look at things differently again, because as we undergo a new placement for a CAO position, as council has called in this budget for both a service delivery review and a full organizational review of every single department in the town, including economic development, There's no doubt we're going to go under considerable change or morphing in this next year.
You mentioned also that the retention officer goes out and visits and tries to stay in touch. Would it be fair to say that the ball got dropped on the Weston Foods portfolio?
I would highly disagree, because we've been in contact with Weston's all the way through. As I indicated, we've had a strong, enduring relationship. We just helped them with a production line that was very positive and promising. So with all those factors in place, I don't know how we could have determined the news that we're about to receive.
Well, it must be somewhat frustrating, though. I mean, you just said we invested money in a line. There's been money put out. You've done a lot of work with them. Surely that must be frustrating for you.
Well, absolutely. It'd be frustrating for any municipality, including the town of Cobourg. My answer to folks out there, welcome to what we might deem the disruptive economy. As the economy changes and sometimes out of your realm, it's unfortunate that we are dealing with the situation we're dealing with, but that maybe at the same time, it will allow us through steps forward to bring in perhaps an innovative, a creative business industry that has a new format, a new way forward, and yet brings different kinds of jobs, maybe with different skill sets. So I'm going to remain very optimistic, Robert, that because we lose one doesn't mean we're going to lose through the whole process.
Well, if I'm a listener out there, though, and I think about it, you know, people pay a lot of tax dollars for economic development in this area. I mean, we've got the county has an economic development office. You mentioned earlier Venture 13 hands out tax money. There's the Small Business Center on William Street. Yep. And then there's some other organizations and institutions. There are the community improvement grants, which the town hands out for the downtown. And yet still there are empty storefronts and the mall is almost deserted. And over the past year, we've seen employers crying out for staff and new hotels being proposed. You say that there's potential for expansion in our industrial park. But we're all in the holding mode. How would you describe what's going on in the local economy?
Well, at this point, I would say, even with the news of Weston's, we're more than holding our own. And some of the facts that have come to mind, we have over 1 million operating square feet in Northern, which people may not realize. We even had 1 million operating square feet in over 12 years in Northern. And that's happening. As I indicated, we're working with two or three, and I can't name them, who are considering expansion in their own merit and what they could do. On top of that, we have been very fortunate because we have added businesses to Lucas Point. We're going to welcome Vancouver, who will build insulated modular products, maybe for Northern or First Nation communities. We've welcomed Long Star Trailer, who will be coming in, and of course Cardinal Industries. With that being said, we're in negotiation with two others who are looking to join Northern, and we're in those talks right now. So when you look at the downtown core, between those leaving and coming in, between Lucas Point, Northern, I'm not saying we're leap and bounds, but we're certainly holding our growth pattern. And overall, we've always hit a minimum of 1% growth consistently in every community. It doesn't seem like a lot, but please remember, communities our size, many are not even achieving that 1% growth. They're going the opposite way. That is not the case, and I want to reiterate this. This is not the case for Cobourg. That being said, as we indicated, Cobourg Council will be welcoming a Holiday Inn Express in 2020 or 2021. We gave approval for a commercial unit, potentially Scotiabank if they wish to join an external unit, Ostrathy Road. We have consistent development from five or six developers in all kinds of housing. We are working towards two community projects with Balder Corporation and Trinity Corporation for housing. So when you look overall at the what I might call the economic well-being or the growth of Cobourg, actually we're more than holding our own. So it's easy to pick up on one issue one focus and say, boy, the world's falling apart. But that is not the case.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about some other things that have been going on as well then. The people living in the neighborhood adjacent to Transition House have appeared before Cobourg Council and Northumberland County Council pleading for help to stop the disruption where they live. There you talk about drug use and property damage, violence, threats, and endless stream of emergency services to the area, including police and ambulance and fire. On top of that, downtown business people are talking about losing business, dealing with vagrants, break-ins, property damage. I even had someone phone me up and say they've lost 30% of their revenue over the last several months and are afraid they're going to go out of business. What are politicians in Cobourg doing to end this situation for these taxpayers?
Well, one of the first things we've been doing, I know people may not like to hear the word meetings, but we've had multiple meetings with multiple organizations, everything from inclusive of our own from Northumberland County and Social Services to the Town of Cobourg, to the Cobourg Police Services Board, to Cornerstone, to Salvation Army, to Greenwood Coalition, and to any other agency. And we are working diligently. We are going to plan an open public meeting on February the 12th at Victoria Hall. And at that point, we hope to share the steps we have made collectively, because we realize it isn't a singular issue. It is a complex issue involving a combination of homelessness, attainable, affordable housing or rental units, mental illness, and of course, opioid or any other form of addiction. So it is a complex issue. We are looking at our resources and what could be done. We'll be sharing both from a Northumberland County as well as the Town of Cobourg, as well as the Cobourg Police Service perspective, the steps that are being taken both in an intermittent fashion, midterm, and long term. And I can tell you we are taking it seriously. We realize that we are suffering this fate, as perhaps all communities are across Ontario. I do not want the citizens of Cobourg to think this is unique to Cobourg. It is not. The bubble is upon us, and we are dealing with it through strategy and development. And how, more importantly, how can we work together? That is really the key word, and to mix our resources, our individuals, our finances, to make this a reality.
Well, I appreciate all of that. But if I'm a resident there and I'm looking out my window every day and watching people across the street using drugs, or I'm coming out and I'm finding somebody defecated on my lawn, and this has been taking place for not just a few weeks, but literally months and almost a year, all of what you've just said provides little solace. What can you say to these people that can assure them that there's going to be some kind of resolution in the near future, and not just them having to be begged patience while everybody meets and sorts out a complex problem?
Well, it's not that, Robert. We do respond. If you look at our stats through EMS, social services, agencies, Cobourg Police Service, and the stats that we have, you'll see that we're responding to pretty much every single case. However, we deal with that in the most effective way we can. But the frustrating part, I must say, when we deal with these, they're dealt with, they're taken before the courts, and for whatever reason, the courts right now are deeming that it is not a risk to society and at the level, and they're taken in on Wednesday and they're released on Friday. And then the problem reoccurs. So we understand, as the chief said, Chief Paul Vandegraaff, we're not going to arrest ourselves out of this situation. So it is critical that we bring the agencies together, and what can we do to address. And part of the problem we realize is the shortage we have. I believe Transition House has 22 beds. Cornerstone has X number of beds to service women and children. We have other agencies. But what we're finding, and this is where we need the help of, again, Mr. Pacini and perhaps Mr. Lawrence, a more of a national strategy, we finding we don't have that that emergency transitional place in which to take an individual. The closest that I'm aware of perhaps could be in Peterborough with their own challenges. And of course, the one that has meets the highest needs is all the way to Durham Region. So we have that issue to deal with. We're asking, we're looking. Right now, we don't have that answer. I'm not going to lie to you. We can't find a transitional place we can take an individual that we have for some form of care and housing in the middle of the night. This falls basically to our agencies at this point in time.
In your mind, is Transition House at the heart of this problem?
No, it is not. And the reason I say that, because if you actually track Transition House, and looked at some of the stats just last week, they've had about one third of their occupants able to move from Transition House to another form of housing. And that's what you're really attempting to do. It's easy to focus on Transition House, but depending on what question you ask for output, we have other areas in the town that are having similar consequences and similar outcomes. And it is a combination of not having enough rental housing, sometimes food security, a degree of mental illness. And as I indicated, if you throw in that mix anything to do with addiction, it certainly brings its challenges. So again, it is affecting our entire community. It's not just one particular region.
You sit on County Council, and I just wondered to what extent do you feel that the county has been caught off guard by the confluence of all of these things? Because a lot of what you're talking about is long-term planning,
yes,
is long-term solutions. And yet what we're seeing is the demand for short-term and mid-term solutions that have to take place. How are you feeling that the county is doing in terms of handling this situation?
Well, I believe this has caught everybody off guard. I believe it's a tsunami that's been coming for some time. The county is very good about ensuring we have long-term planning, which I believe is critical for the path forward. But as we deal with the homelessness plan, I sit on the board of Northumberland County to aid those in particular for rent-to-geared incomes. As we attempt to buy more land, as we try these focuses, redevelopment projects, you're quite right, Robert, these are all mid and long term. I feel it's important as we move to February 12th, we work together to find local, weekly, daily strategies. And that's why we're having discussions with, whether it be Cornerstone, Greenwood Coalition, private community organizations within the downtown core, Salvation Army.
But when you were talking about giving the contract back in 2019 back to Transition House, I mean, we all knew that it was going to be a low threshold type of emergency shelter so people could get in. It was very important to do that. Yet you look at all the literature, there's been no mental health workers hired, no counselors, there's no programs going on at all. I mean, those are things that could happen now, even if the county was to provide funding to some of the agencies that you've been talking about, so to get this thing jump-started. Why are we not taking those steps, and you're in there advocating for this to get done so that we get some things, so that these people have a program, that they can get the mental health services that they need and so forth?
Well, that does exist, Robert, and that will be shared on, because I think there's a misinterpretation that these don't exist. Well, in fact, they do. The question is, how do we offer and allow them to gain access? So at this time, I know Transition House will be announcing this week a new executive director. I know there's been new governance programs being put in place. I would like to congratulate Inspector Shields for agreeing to sit on the board and to increase the scope of those on the board of Transition House. And in fact, what's been asked of the community is to end up being a good neighbor. So I believe, even though it perhaps happening later than we would sometimes like to see, I'm very pleased that this is happening, and these and other facets will be announced on February 12th as to what we can do, what the county can do to ensure that we're matching the individual to services required.
Well, that's some really big steps to take, and I think a lot of people will be watching this very closely to see how it unfolds, because I agree with you, it's incredibly complex, and it's not just something you can wave a magic wand and it's going to be solved. But with that, I think it's time to take a commercial break. So I'm with Coburg Mayor John Henderson. We're talking about what's been going on in Coburg. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This, and I am your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. I'm with Coburg Mayor John Henderson. Just before the break, we were talking about Transition House, and part of the issue that you described was the opioid epidemic that has been facing our area. Council's dedicated $10,000 in its budget. Is this sufficient from the municipal perspective to deal with this emerging situation?
I would say from my perspective, I'm not going to speak for council because that's what council determined, but I would say to you not. We know this is going to be an ongoing situation. Resources of any type, whether you talk of time, people, material, programming, all take money to some degree. I expect council will have to be prepared, working with the county, to allocate more resources. If I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember all my budget numbers from county, I believe that Northumberland County put in an additional $100,000 this year towards enhancing social services and its different elements. So the key word, again, I'm going to use, Robert, is us working together. If I find sitting on as a council member on Northumberland County that we do need more resources and more money, I will not hesitate to take that to the deputy mayor, budget chief, and to the rest of council.
How troubled are you by the emergence of new and more deadly forms of the drugs, the mixing that we've seen in the last month? Two press releases come out about even more fatal forms of drugs in our community.
Well, like any individual today, especially those who may be a parent, I guess that's what I would suggest, that you have strong communications with your children. You develop that rapport, because you're quite right, Robert. Even if you were in an experimental stage of your life and you tried the wrong package, it could have deadly results. And so this is hitting our community. We're aware of this. I want to congratulate the Coburg Police Service. They've done an amazing job on the number of interventions to prevent this from hitting our street. They've done simply, in my opinion, just an amazing job trying to keep a handle. And the message we're trying to deliver, if you're bringing this to the Coburg community, you're certainly not welcome.
In a recent interview with Chief Paul Vandegraaff, he talked about the fact that officers are now finding guns or replica guns when they're doing searches or when they're making arrests. He indicated that this was an escalation in the level of danger, where local people are feeling that now they need to be armed when they're dealing with each other. How much does that worry you?
The dynamics have changed, but I want to reiterate, the dynamics have changed, unfortunately, are coming outside in. And what I mean by that, we're influenced perhaps by Toronto, Montreal, what we might call 401 crime, going along the 401 corridor. And as that comes in, yes, we have some individuals who flaunt the law in all its aspects. That is not representative of even our citizens who may have their odd challenge. I'm not going to give you the stats that we receive on the board. That's up to the chief to give you those stats, or the chair. But I don't want alarmed created that you think we have guns floating around in our town, plural. That would be a miscommunication and would be inaccurate. Do we have some replica in certain cases when a raid is done? The answer is yes. However, This individual would do the same, whether it be in Toronto or in any other community. And traditionally, when the officers work, they already have a very extensive criminal record. So it's not something just inherent within Coburg. It's unfortunately something that all communities, I want to stress, we're all dealing with this, and it has a lot to do with, as I announced, the 401, what I call the corridor crime.
All right. I mean, you can argue that, but at the same time, I mean, when you look on social media, there's a lot of people in the community that seem to be complaining about the fact that Coburg doesn't feel safe anymore. And also, I mean, there's a petition going around that's being trying to say, you know, safe community Northumberland. There's all kinds of things sort of percolating in the background where people don't feel like that. And I mean, you can say, well, we're all in the same boat, but that really doesn't say much about how people are feeling and whether they're feeling the sense of our community is safe and that we're okay in the face of all of this.
Well, I can only go by the stats, Robert, and surveys and everything else we have before us. And for the most part, and everything I've been able to read or find or go to, we are deemed to be a safe community. With that being said, do we have issues where, I'll use the issue of what we might call learning how to be a good neighbor, how to be respectful of where one lives? Those issues, are they're inherent? They are. Should someone feel safe walking down their street or at night? Yes, they should. So we're still dealing with that. I'm not going to tell anyone who has had an unfortunate encounter that they shouldn't feel the way they feel. They're entitled to feel that way. And part of our community standard is to safe. But when you look at our statistics from an analytics point of view, I'd have to tell you, we're a safe community, and everything I'm aware of and how we would define safety in all its various elements and all its various categories that we deal with, whether under prevention or crime statistics, we're way up there. I mean,
But John, it's like the economics. You hear our economists talk about this. Economy is strong, and yet they'll talk about consumer confidence. Yep. And that being a factor that takes away from that strong sense of the economy and the economy working. Do we not have the same situation being created here where, you know, you're telling me all these great stats, we're not to worry, and yet at the same time, you talk to people or you're watching social media and there's this underlying tension of something's changing in our community. It's not the same that it was, and it's not good, whatever it is. And that feeling is feeling that we're not safe. How do you deal with that psychological aspect, that the feeling rather than just the statistics?
Well, feelings, as I indicated, Robert, are real. If they're perceived, I'm going to tell anybody they are real for that individual or that family. And how we're going to be measured is how do we respond to that. And again, I want to go back to our agencies and the Coburg Police Service. I want to commend them, because anytime that has come to the forefront, the information I have and I've been dealing with the chief, they have been responding to what I might call all calls of service to try and create that wonderful going back to that community feel. And if you have a concern, we'll be there with you to address it. So if we were ignoring it, pretending it didn't exist, I think that would be a different answer. Again, I know it does exist in certain component neighborhoods. It has changed the barometer within Coburg, but I believe it's our consistent efforts in dealing with what I indicated before. We really have to get a handle on rental, food security, mental health, opioid, because until we address those issues, it is going to be with us to some degree.
I want to shift gears in a major way now, and I want to just ask you about the last year, because it was just over a year ago that you were elected and sworn in. What's been the biggest change for you personally, not politically, but personally, over the past year?
I guess in quick summary, I knew when I took on this role, as you take on any enhanced role, there would be additional hours, additional meetings, additional for me, that was a given. What I've had to learn to deal with is the volume and the areas that are coming in that you're not always expecting. And as a result, to try to meet those different outcomes, obviously it's added on to my schedule. And the challenge is to find a balance between my dedication, which I trust I have, to Town of Cobourg and the role, and my private life. So often I don't have weeks less than 60 hours as mayor in all its facets, and a lot of that sometimes is by choice. So if someone's thinking that the mayor's position is half time, I can tell you that's not even close to a realm of what we're dealing with now in Cobourg in all its facets. So that for me was probably the greatest change, and I hope as I enter year two, working with others and delegation, I will continue to get a better handle on the overview. But again, Robert, if I can use the example of Weston's, you go on with your business and what you're planning for, and then all of a sudden you get a phone call and the dynamics change. And that's how quickly they can change. And you, and again, when they change, you just can't say, oh, well, too bad, so sad. You really have to start to deal with it. So
how do you step back from all the politics and the pressure? Do you do things to relax? Do you have any hobbies that you do to sort of balance things out?
I want to encourage everybody, male or female. I make a real effort to take my wife on date nights. I think that's really helpful. We actually plan to do a date night. Could be simple to complex. The other thing I do, I enjoy athletics. I'm engaged physically because I think physical fitness is a large part of mental fitness. And right now, unfortunately, I have an old injury that's raising its ugly head, and unfortunately, it's limited my athletic time on the ice, both in curling and skiing. And but I'm hoping I will get past that as well. The other thing I like to do, Robert, people may not know this, but in my quiet time, I enjoy different programs, but I like to read a lot. And I could have as many between 6 and 10 different novels or books on the go simultaneously, and I read them depending on my mood, and I find that forms calming time. Believe it or not, it gives me a chance just to think about something else. And lastly, I make a real effort as my children get older. I make a real effort to see my children both collectively and independently, where I actually plan to do something on a continuous basis with each of my children so that we have something to share. But most recently, I treated my son to a game in New England in Boston, in Foxborough. We went down and did the whole New England experience in Boston for an entire weekend. So I actually make an effort to do those types of things. And I think between stuff for myself and family, it helps to balance. And I do want to thank my staff. I have a very short staff in town, but Tony Gallia and Ashley Purdy Communications and the clerk and others, and they've been outstanding in helping me to create that balance.
What's the book on your nightstand?
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Okay, I have Ray Diabolo, who is probably one of the top, I'd say top 25 billionaires in the world, who wrote a book on organizational theories and organizations. And so I'm reading that one as we speak. And I have yet to get into, I believe it's called Me. One of my daughters brought me the book on Elton John.
Not light reading. You sure that's relaxing?
For me, it is.
Okay. What could you do to be a better politician?
Well, I don't know what the true definition of a politician is, but I have made a very concerted effort this year in particular that when I get a phone call or a lead or a concern, typically within 24 or 48 hours, I slip off that edge on occasion because of volume. I do meet, converse, or meet face-to-face with citizens. I follow up all initiatives, all programs, and you say, which ones? My answer is every one of them. I think perhaps I maybe only dropped the ball on maybe two or three in this past year out of literally hundreds. And I make a really concerted effort to listen to the citizens. It doesn't mean I'm going to give them the answer they're looking for, but I am going to give them an honest answer based on circumstances that we're dealing with. And I've made that a really key focus. To keep up with that, it's just my way. I will go in quietly sometime on a weekend, or if I find my wife is busy at her choir, then I'll go in for two or three hours on a Wednesday night and spend the extra time just to ensure that everything remains in a balance. And for me, I think that's the critical piece, to be listening to what citizens are saying and responding accordingly.
So what's the next big thing coming up in your mind, with all everything that's going on? What's the next big thing that you're going to be focusing on?
Well, obviously, Westons, as I mentioned, will be at the forefront, because when you say Westons, that means people, and people always have to be first place. I know we're planning somewhere in spring or summer a celebration for Coburg's 160th, I believe. I believe the art gallery in their own merit will be celebrating their 60th anniversary. On a more important note, I'm anxious, as the rest of council is, to pass the budget on February the 3rd. I'm anxious about, and anxious in a good way, I don't want you to think anxious in a negative way, but to start to deal with, we're going to be looking for a new chief administration officer in the town of Coburg, which is rather significant. And as I mentioned already, we will be looking at a total service delivery review that we put in the budget, along with an organizational review. And we've also put in the budget, it will need subsequent budgets, it will need multiple budgets, but we're going to start to develop a total integrated records management system for the entire town of Coburg. So we have some huge endeavors before us. And with that being said, please let's not forget, we did make a submission under Canada Infrastructure Funding. We did put in $10.6 million towards the harbor in the East Pier. And we did put in $1.6 million if we can ever bring back the Victoria Hall Square Phase 4 project. And this week, we'll also be submitting a major project for streets reconstruction under the Green Fund. So there's no shortage of major focuses moving forward. And I've often said that with our growth over the years, we are at a crossroads. And I want to compliment our council for taking on these huge initiatives, because they're going to be time consuming, but more importantly, the idea is to make us a little bit more efficient when we deal with service delivery, and can we be both efficient and effective?
So much going on, and we have so little time. So I hope you'll come back really soon to keep talking about the issues that are going on and help fill in what's taking place. So thank you so much for coming
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So please tune in. I would also like to say to all of you who continue to write thoughtful, caring, and insightful comments to my social media. Social media is not always a good place to debate issues, yet I am grateful to those who demonstrate that you can still have intelligent, considered, and caring discussions online. So thank you very much. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This, or if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. If you would like to listen to this or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you'll find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this.